Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, episode 14. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California, near San Diego.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative, just outside of New York City in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, here we are again. Great to have us just gathered together talking about presentation design and presentation stuff in general. What's happening with everybody? Anything exciting in the works?
Yeah, well, I just finished my first, actually two decks that really made use of Morph, which is, one was a auto-running show for like a conference that had to show this, you know, basically how their software works, how their new online software works. And it was just fun. I was remembering, because I haven't used Keynote that much in years. I used to use it a lot, and I would always play with Magic Move. And it's just fun to be able to just, you know, put something here, and let the program do the work for you instead of, you know, programming it all out. So that was fun. And the other thing I'm doing next week, I'm heading off to a conference, which is my first active marketing investment. Ooh. I've made, which, you know, I never really had to, but I'm trying to get even more training going and sort of pull back on the project work. So I'm going to a conference of communication directors for nonprofits and NGOs out in Detroit. So I've got a whole full day scheduled of back-to-back meetings.
Oh my goodness.
Scheduled by the conference. So, I mean, I'm still fronting some money to get out there. I'm not technically speaking, but I'm looking forward to it, to making lots of connections.
Oh, I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, good luck on that.
Thanks.
Yeah, and your expertise in visualization, I think that term is being accepted broadly and understood broadly, and people know that they need it.
And if I do it right, I have one client that I've had for years, and I still have them. I do occasional work for them. But after I created a huge template for them and trained them online, I don't hear from them very often, which is the point of it, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the point of
get
a good template
a
and
job.
Good training to mm-hmm. get people to be able to do things on their own without having to run and pay money to a designer every time? So
exactly.
In that case, it seems to be working.
I tell my client, I do train on my templates, but I do tell them I'm trying to work myself out of a job.
Yeah.
So a client of mine who happens to like my approach to PowerPoint recently asked me to create an 18-month marketing theme that their company would rally around and leverage with upcoming conferences. So the creative pitch went really, really well. And we're off and running at implementing a final concept for internal and external communications.
Wow, cool. I don't like to think a week in advance. You gotta go a year and a half out.
Yeah, 18 months.
That's fantastic. That is a great client. They will be excited to have you around.
I'm not going to ask you how much you're charging, but how are you like billing every month or in stages?
The original creative development was built as a project. With an estimate, and then as we execute this going forward, it will be on a project-by-project basis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's hear, what could I talk about that even comes close to
those?
Oh,
I'm so sure.
Well, you know, it's been nonstop travel for shows is what it really is. This is the end of the year. It's conference season. It's corporate meeting season, national sales meetings. And being an on-site presentation graphics op for me, that means I'm gone. You know, I've been... It's not just me either. It's like four or five of the TLC team is out of the office every single day for the next, last month, this month, and into the middle of, all the way through October until the middle of November. We're just crazy. Mm-hmm. So it's lots and lots of new projects in addition, and I am not complaining in any way, but I have been so busy doing between being on show site, handling long hours and fun projects there, you know, doing all the paperwork, project estimates, you know, on outlining deliverables, being the creative director on projects the TLC design team's been on. And I guess because of that, you may hear it in my voice. I've been home this one week. Literally, this is the only week in between shows, and it worked out perfect because my body knew it. We were going to do this recording earlier in the week, but I couldn't. I had no voice whatsoever. So hopefully you know, through the magic of some audio quality improvements, post-editing, I'll sound not super under the weather, but I think the travel just kind of caught up to me. So this is my once a year under the weather time as well. And I'm drinking tea, if you can't hear. So I'm just, you know, ignore that. yeah, more honey tea. That's good. Now I can talk more. I guess that's my news. So that's what's happening.
Good news. Cool.
What is happening in news? Anybody got any kind of cool...
Yeah, some stuff's going on the Mac. We had another Insider Fast release, so Mac now has Designer, which has been on PC for 3-4 months or so. So for those of you who don't know, that's the ability, if you use currently a Microsoft theme, you have to use one of the built-in ones, but then if you start putting text and image on the page, something will pop up on the right-hand side called Designer, which will give you all these different new layouts that are not sort of the standard, you know, theme layouts, all basically really well-designed ways of designing that content. So that's, you know, we've joked about that's going to put all of us out of business. But yeah, some of them are great. And then as you put in different content, it'll shift and change. So it's still a first generation feature, but I think it holds a lot of promise. And the other thing, we now have colored guides. so yeah, that's a real big one, but it helps every once in a while. So you can change the colors of your guides. Like if you have a gray background, you have gray guides, that doesn't help.
Right. So now you can, or if you're designing your layout for your content slide is you need slightly different guidance than you do for your title slide.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't change per slide. It's global, right?
Well, if you put them on the slide master, mm-hmm. you can then go to the slide layouts and apply different guides.
By each layout can have different guides?
Master and layouts are separated. Yeah. It's not per layout, which would be really awesome.
Oh. Yeah.
And then guides on the editable slide are another color still.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is nice because that lets people know like these are the movable ones. Play with these all you want, but the other ones you shouldn't touch because they actually tell you where your baseline is for, you know, all text starting and stuff. It's very cool.
Well, I'm going to pitch the Presentation Summit again because anyone who's listening to this podcast should be at the Presentation Summit.
That's timely news.
That's it. I'm going to go. You've convinced me.
I'm so glad. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Just know it's in Vegas. I think it's October 23rd through the 26th.
News. Well, like political statistics, where you find the stat to match the message, this is totally newsworthy to me. The Presentation Podcast is ranked a number 2 on iTunes in the What's New... Let's hear. How do you say this? It's in the What's New for Design category. Literally, we're number 2. But unlike political stats, I'll just reveal the whole story. If you switch over to iTunes What's Hot ranking, which is everything in design, we don't even rank in the top 100 yet.
Okay.
So, you know, if we find that little sliver, we're really good. So everyone listening, you can change that with like 2 minutes of your time in iTunes by first subscribing to the podcast. We would love it if it just showed up in your mobile device. And that's like the first 45 seconds. The balance of the time, adding a nice iTunes review. Again, if you're a SoundCloud or a Stitcher user, just leave us a review on iTunes because that is actually what all the rankings are based on, reviews and number of subscribers. And we'd love to just have more people find it and... you know, you can tell by the amount of advertising we're completely vested in making this a money-making venture. No, we do it for fun, but I would like to have more people find it. So I guess that's my political news stat of the day is I found a way to call us number 2 in the world of podcasts.
Woo-hoo!
That's great.
Okay, on to our topic of the day. Books, you know, traditional print or digital, they provide entertainment, education, ideas, and everything else. So for today's podcast, we've gathered together our favorite books. Literally, my desk looks like a small library. I just grabbed all the books I thought would be needed I thought they'd be interesting for this podcast. And we're basically having our very own book club focused on presentations, design, business, and just some random fun stuff. So... let the book club discussion begin.
And I got to say, I'm looking at our show notes right now, and these may not even be complete at this point. it's a little overwhelming because we've listed every book that we think we might talk about. So let's jump in. And really the first, I think maybe this first category we should talk about are presentation design books, books specific to presentation.
Perfect.
And it used to be, years ago, there were only a couple, but it has exploded now. I mean, in everything, people just keep writing more and the old ones don't go away. The old ones I think are still for the most part really relevant. Mm-hmm. So I have a huge collection and I'm a collector of presentation books. If I see a new one, you know, I'm just going to buy it instantly. Even if I don't completely read it, I'll at least skim it. So I think we're going to have a lot in common, but let me kick it off with the first ones that I read and maybe the most influential ones for me. And then maybe a couple that I think have flown unfairly under the radar, at least for me. So I think the first presentation book I read, I think a lot of people read, was Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. He followed that up with Presentation Design Zen and another one. But he was sort of the first person to really say that it's not only okay, but advantageous to be simple with your designs and simple with your slide presentations. You know, a lot of his stuff really looks like he took a lot of inspiration from Steve Jobs and how Apple presented that idea of simplicity. So everything in there, I think, still holds true. And that was, you know, probably number one on my bookshelf. And it's a well-worn copy.
So this is a great talk because we're all going to have a huge amount of overlap. But it was one of the earlier books I read as well. And mainly because it was an easy read and it made sense.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, he's a professor now, but I wouldn't put that book in the education textbook, like bore you with statistics type of read. It was an actual read that made sense and was applicable.
The other one that was on my bookshelf early was one by a friend of ours called Fixing PowerPoint Annoyances. And so where Gar was sort of that was the first book that, you know, said, hey, you should design this way. And I was like, yeah, I should. Fixing PowerPoint Annoyances was more on the technical side of, you know, not only giving you tricks, but permission to kind of hack PowerPoint. It was, you know, here are the problems we're all having with PowerPoint. We can't get it to do what we want to do. Here's how to fix it. So that, again, was one of those books that I referred to constantly when I was learning and teaching myself.
We need to talk to Echo, and I got to look up the publisher. I got the book right here in my stack. Here it is right on top. It's an O'Reilly book. We need to get an updated version of this because it really had a ton of – I'm looking through it again. It's got a ton of great infos, but you're right. It's all screen captures on legacy version of PowerPoint.
Maybe it's time for something new. But as we always say, PowerPoint is changing monthly. So
it is a great book. It really, really is, because it was the first one that was kind of like truthful. Like, this program is not, it's not fully baked, and there's a lot of work, you know, hacks you have to know to make it work the way you want it to. And I think it was a great book. Give another one.
Slideology is another huge one that came out a few years ago, and that was sort of in the spirit of Presentation Zen and was really sort of industry changing. That was Duarte's first book that, and again, it was for the masses, and still is. And it basically said, you know, again, picking up where I think Gar left off of, you know, these are techniques and these are, you know, philosophies on how to make simpler, clearer presentations. And it's still incredibly relevant today.
It is. I had so many post-it notes on every single page. That book was so marked up for me.
What I do with books is every time, whether I read a presentation book or any book, I'll put a sheet of paper in the front, and every time I get to a quote or something I like, I'll just write it down on the paper. So when I go back to the book, I just pull that sheet out, and if there was a great quote or something, it'll be on that page. I don't have to go searching for it. And yeah, I think I have a number of sheets for Slideology.
You know what? We have a category we'll talk about later, which is the DataViz one, and I was almost tempted to put this one in there because from a presentation standpoint, Slideology just completely it resonated with me. Somebody get that joke.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I like read it. I'm like, oh yeah, this is absolutely what this is. This makes, it's what we do. It was very, very in alignment, or I should say I was very in alignment with it. But the part that really got me was the parts that talked about how to simplify data charts, you know, the whole pictorial, radiant, you know, cluster, the whole way of visualizing information, I thought was really good. So I was actually debating on which category to put this in just to throw it together.
I know.
It's an awesome one.
The next book that I really like, not so much about design, but just sort of philosophy, is Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs. And, you know, he's always held up as sort of a great presenter and really one of the best. But it really analyzes why he was a great speaker. And yeah, it focuses a little on slide design and stuff, but also just on messaging. And again, simplicity of message and clarity. And there are photos. It's very different from the previous ones we were talking about. But that's by Carmine Gallo. And wonderful read.
You give that book to your clients who come to you and say, I want a presentation like Steve Jobs.
Well, first thing I usually say is, I say, can we talk about the content?
Yeah.
And that is the biggest thing, that you can only have something that looks like that if your content allows for that. So exactly. I always say, content affects design, and then design turns right around and affects content. So they're paired together. Mm-hmm. So the last three I've got in this sort of section are, I think, sort of under the radar ones. Speaking PowerPoint by Bruce Gabriel. I don't know if you guys know Bruce. I think the whole book is black and white, but it really gets into a lot of the real use cases for business. And that's something that sort of Bruce focuses on. So, you know, a book like Slideology is great, but, you know, you're going to see lots of slides of like a big, beautiful photo and two words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what Bruce gets into is, okay, in the real corporate world, when we have a spreadsheet and lots of content and everything, and we're building handout decks and things like that, here are solutions for that. And here's are some, you know, best practices for that. So I like it for that, from a business
context. I'll be honest, I bought it the day it came out because I was so excited to buy it, but I'm really good at buying books and not always good at reading them. So I use them as reference more than reading material.
There's another one that I stumbled across. I've never heard anybody else talk about it. Presentation Secrets by Alexei Kaptarev. It treads the same ground as a lot of other books, so I'm not so sure there's a ton of original thinking in it, but it's pretty well produced. There are lots of examples in it, so I like it for that. I think it was well put together. And the last that I really like is The Art of the Start by Guy Kawasaki, that was an older book of his. It was one of his first, and I know they came out with a 2.0 version recently, but it's just really good about, again, simplification. And I think that was the first place I read that you should only have 10 slides in an investor deck. And if you know, he always says, if you can't explain your business to me in 10 slides, you don't understand it well enough and I don't want to invest in it. And I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Exactly. I will not repeat. I mean, the large majority of what you just mentioned, Nolan, that's on my list as well for presentation design books. I'll add a couple. Remember Beyond Bullet Points by Cliff Atkinson?
Oh, my first and favorite book still. There's so many.
That might have actually been the first.
Okay. Well, here I was working in the legal field a lot at that time. Oh. So it was very, very relevant. Mm. You'll recall that he helped, and I don't remember the law firm, but it was the big, oh my goodness.
He had a legal presentation, which was the basis of everything.
$2 billion settlement or something huge, whatever. But what I liked most about Beyond Bullet Points was the, do you call it appendix, the summary in the back, where he worked closely or consulted closely with Richard Mayer, who wrote Multimedia Learning. And that was a very dry research summary.
Textbook-like
of audiovisual learning, how humans learn in an audiovisual environment. Loved it, but I went to Cliff's book for the great understandable perspective on multimedia learning. So those books go hand in hand. I have read Richard Mayer's Multimedia Learning, but
that's impressive.
It's more understandable in Beyond Bullet Points by Cliff. I have countless PowerPoint help books.
Even the fact that there are countless PowerPoint specific books now is, well, it's amazing to me considering I started in the news group because that was the only place you could find anybody with any information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the really old, boy, what do you even call it, where it was just a text-based news group? Microsoft shut them all down now.
Right.
They're now on the answers thing, which is a whole different thing. Let's see here. Mm-hmm. Do I have anything I can add to this list? I had Slideology, Resonate, put in my list the building PowerPoint templates, which is more of a technical skill.
But it's design.
But it's
yeah, I'd put
all
that
about
in
PowerPoints. It's presentation specific. And Echo Swinford, Julie Terberg put together the Bible on PowerPoint templates. Even though PowerPoint is progressing and adding and changing things, it is still the basis of the way templates should be built today. If you use PowerPoint, that is, and you're going to do a technical template, hire somebody that knows about that. Actually, that'd be a great reference. When you call somebody up to say, I need to have you build my template, and they say, yes, I can do it. You could say, are you familiar with the book Building PowerPoint Templates? Mm-hmm. If they say no, they don't know what they're doing. It's mm-hmm. almost guaranteed.
Yeah, nobody really should undertake a template building project without having read that. That's
right.
Kind of necessary.
I would say read that book backward. Start with the back end where there's a literal checklist of the steps you need to take to build your template, and then reference the body of the book as you go through the checklist. I think it's a great book.
Good idea.
You know, I'm not sure if these ones would work in there, but I also had Select Effective Visuals by Dave Peretti. But that might fall under our visualization. But I just thought it was a great read mm-hmm. with lots and lots of examples that were specific to how to build presentation content. And the other one I put is a really small book by a Dr. Abuela, Andrew Abuela, I'm guessing on the pronunciation. But it's called The Presentation, a story about communicating successfully with very few slides. And it's the first part of it's kind of like a little motivational talk about, you know, sets up a story about somebody doing it. And then the second half of the book is just examples of how the concept went from a huge flow chart of ideas down to this very compact amount of information. And I'm trying to find the, you know, where do you find the published date? 2010. So it is older. It's mm-hmm. not quite as old as I thought it was going to be, but it was a quick read. I mean, it's short. It's under 100 pages. But I threw that into presentation design because I thought it was very, very – well, it made an impact on my philosophy for design. So thank you, Dr. Abuela.
Yeah, I don't have that book, but he has another book that I have. I think Advanced Presentation by Design. There was one on your list, Sandy. You didn't mention that Rick's book.
Thank you.
Which, first of all, I think has probably the best title. it's called Why Most PowerPoint Presentations Suck and What You Can Do to Make Them Better. But I love books that – I mean, I took a lot away from that. I took a lot away from a lot of things. But I love any book where I take away one thing that I use every single day or teach. And from that book, I took away one thing that I literally teach in every single course that I present. And I've told Rick, he knows about it. But the technique is what he calls the three-word challenge.
Yes.
And it's a way to reduce content in your headers and your bullet points and everything. And I literally take people through how to do that. So,
Same here. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up. I was also one of the editors on that book.
All right. So let's talk about some general design books. I'm not a trained designer, as some people will remind me often. So I've read a lot, and a lot of self-education. So I've got lots of design books. I used to love to buy the dollar design books from used bookstores that were showcases of business card and letterhead design. Do you remember those?
Oh,
they used to like come out with them all the time, and that's where I would just get exposed to that's a great way of doing a logo or letterhead. So I have a ton of those. But
that's my background in print. We used to live for looking at those just to get other ideas of what printing possibilities were out there.
Yeah, they were great. I don't know where they sourced everything from, but it was cool. But one of my the book I always tell, I give to people who are non-designers to say this is a great introduction is something called White Space is Not Your Enemy by a couple of authors, Kim Golombinski and Rebecca Hagen. And it's that I always say negative space or white space is probably the most important graphic design principle. And they agree. So they titled the book that. But it just goes through, layout and hierarchy and balance and really sort of a general introduction to design. So that's one I love.
That is, I would like to get a link to that. I have not read that one. And
I think they came out with an updated version recently. But yeah,
I'll have to get that. Again, I reference everything. I don't read anything. So my list ranges from Visual Language for Designers by Connie Malamed. Is that
That's a great book.
It is. I think actually you tweeted that when it came out, and I was so excited I went out and bought it.
Yeah, and then I think I met her at the summit, and I was so excited because I'd read the book, and I was very excited to meet her.
She's great. Layout Essentials by Beth Tondreau. grids and page layouts. I mean, very fundamental grids and page layouts by Amy Graver and Ben Jura, and even the elements of typographical style.
That's a good one.
Yep,
I've got that on my shelf too.
Okay, I've got one for the all the non-designers in the crowd. This is a phenomenal book that no one will think to buy unless we mention it. Are either of you familiar with Chip Kidd?
Nope.
K-I-D-D?
No, I'm not.
Okay, you actually are. I heard him on a podcast at one point, and he's just a great guy. But what he was a book cover designer. And what he really got well known for is he did the original Jurassic Park book cover with the T-Rex skeleton.
The black and white.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Him, Chip Kidd. And he has a great story about how he didn't get the rights for, you know, all the movies and stuff where they got to use it. But he's a great, great designer. He's a really great, fun guy to listen to. He wrote a kid's book. And this is actually the podcast I listened to. Was him when this book came out, which is only a couple of years ago. So it's called Go, which is really funny because it's the word go on a stop sign. So it's a visual paradox right there. And it's called A Kid's Guide to Graphic Design. Kid, K-I-D-D, his last name. And it really is. It's like, you know how when you go to college, you have a 100-level course, you know, the very basics?
Yeah.
I actually have given this now to a couple of our design team that you know, also didn't have a formal graphic design background or training. I say this is like the 99 level. It's below the introduction. It is such a fun, easy read. It's kind of a hardcover, like those really thick kids' books. And it basically explains graphic design principles in like the easiest concepts and greatest visuals. And one of the ones that I like the best is he has this thing about image quality with this picture of a, you know, it's like full page, huge dog. And he shows it in 300 DPI, 72 DPI, 10 DPI, and 2 DPI. You pretty much get the idea of what DPI can do. And he kind of explains that, you know, sizing things up, you know, doesn't actually re-res it. And it's a really good book. It is the, if you haven't taken design school training or it's been a long time, this is like the quick, really fun refresher on principles. So there's my general design book, because that is about as general as you can get. I have others, but Nolan, what do you got?
Nice. There was another sort of early one, Robin Williams Design Workshop.
Oh yeah, that'd be like the exact opposite of one I talked about, because that's like really in-depth, cool design stuff. Mine is like the most simple, fun design.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, it's not that, you know, in-depth and technical, but it's like a workshop. He literally takes you through, you know, and he shows, you know, he'll show, you know, 20 different steps and options and things that were, you know, thrown in the garbage, you know, to do a brochure layout. And I'll say, you know, here's the content I started with, and here's, we tried this, and then we tried this, and we tried this. And you can really see a designer thinking and working. And you know, because it's not, you know, the ultimate graphic design product can be often very simple. And you think, oh, that just appeared out of the air. Like, that probably took you 5 minutes. Yeah. But you really take, oh. But we know it doesn't.
Right.
So it's nice to see sort of the, and then he also says, you know, we could have gone in this direction if we wanted it to be more fun or more serious. And so, yeah, it was really cool to see options. The, I don't want to slam anything, but get that book. Do not get Robin's presentation book. I have that on my shelf, and it just sends people in wrong directions.
And then I got a new book. Actually, I got a new book. So this one, it just came yesterday. You know, I just got it yesterday. It came earlier in the week, but I haven't been allowed in the studio to go pick up anything. Are you guys familiar with a DDC, Draplin Design Company?
No, not at all.
Aaron Draplin is a character. He just released a book called Pretty Much Everything. And what I discovered is it's a great design company. Formal graphic design, lots and lots of print design. He's behind Field Notes, the little books, the little notebooks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar with those. But anyways, I just got this hardbound book, and it's pretty cool because what Pretty Much Everything is pretty much everything he's ever done. It's just page after page of logos, of apparel, of records, of just massive inspiration. Mm-hmm. And I only started glancing at it yesterday, and it's just really, really cool and inspiring.
I've got two more. Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics, which is, he's a comic book artist, and the whole thing is illustrated, but it's not so much about design, about how design works and for the brain and how people receive impressions. It's kind of a difficult book to explain, but anybody who is a designer should absolutely read, or anybody who wants to communicate visually. I mean, it's a fun read too, and it's all illustrated, and it's unusual. It's sort of in a category of its own. And the last one, I was just looking at my shelf, The Art of Innovation by Tom Kelly of IDEO Design, is just a wonderful book about not necessarily graphic design in particular, but all sorts of design and what makes good design, and certainly what IDEO thinks makes good design.
You know, I'll wrap out or close out the section, because this one I think falls into the category of general design. We're on general design, right? Let me make sure I'm talking about this. It's called Managing the Design Process, Implementing Design. So it's a little bit on the business side, but it's also it's by Terry Lee Stone, three separate words, and it's just a great introduction to things like. You know, they got a whole chart on design planning 101. And I made, you know, some notes in there about what a creative brief is. It's a lot of the general design. I don't want to call it the artistic side of design, but it's the structural side of design. And what do you need to think about in putting forth your design? And then it goes into some other businessy stuff, budgets and stuff. But I really think it falls into general design, because you have to think about the long-term implications of how a project's going to go and where things could be used. And I think that's a great way to dovetail the whole business side of design with actual design. So I'll throw that in general business.
I think that's perfect. I think all of us are successful at what we do because we consider the business, the client's business, in our design efforts. It's about their business as much as it is about good-looking design.
And that's because we've read a lot of good books, according to this
list. Right. That's right.
Let's talk about, go the other route, presenting live, like people that actually do presentation skills. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
That's a good one. Yeah. I think Carmine Gallo's book I mentioned before on Steve Jobs is good, but I love something by Scott Berkin called Confessions of a Public Speaker that really gets into like kind of the nitty gritty and sort of hotels and preparation and booking and charging and things like that. And just, you know, endless stories about, you know, different actual live presentation situations.
I've got one. This is again, a lot of mine are quick reads. There's maybe, as I'm thinking about it, like the last one I talked about, not a quick read, the Implementing Design Process, not a quick read, but this one's a quick read. Joey Asher, great presenter, and actually I have a couple of, you know, I'm just going to throw them both out there. He did a book, How to Win a Pitch, which was, I think it had a lot of great practical information. And, you know, I apply a lot of that to daily operations here. Last night we were brainstorming these themes for an upcoming thing. It was kind of like we're pitching it, and it was, you know, I can probably look at that book and see a lot of the methodology in there. And he has another one called 15 minutes, and it's kind of along the lines of the, hey, you should do your investor presentation in 10 slides. This one is, you should be able to do your presentation in 15 minutes. So Joey Asher has a lot of good public speaking, really good website, and some other stuff along those lines too. But I do like his books in that realm.
Okay. You know, I have two also, and I'm going to address both of them. All the books by Dave, our colleague, MVP colleague, Dave Parody, are short and quick reads. He has one book that's called Present It So They Get It.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And so I suggest that our listeners read that book. And I'm going to reference Rick Altman's book again. While it's a lot about PowerPoint presentations, he does have a chapter in there about working a room, and I think it's very helpful.
Got a couple. Jerry Weissman has a number of books. One of them is Presenting to Win, and he's been around for a while. I believe out in Silicon Valley, he's helped a lot of companies go public with roadshows, and he's a speech coach and puts together stories. So he's helped a lot with investor roadshows and bringing companies to market and how they present themselves. And the one I read years and years ago, but still holds up, Dale Carnegie's Quick and Easy Way to Effective Speaking, maybe one of the first books on speaking, but I'm a huge Dale Carnegie fan. I think he doesn't these days doesn't get the due that
right,
he deserves.
Right, exactly.
That and How to Win Friends and Influence People have been on my shelf mm-hmm. Since middle school, probably.
It's very that's a business book. We should segue to business, because if you can't figure that one out, you're not in business for long.
I agree. Exactly. I would put that as one of the best business books out there, certainly in terms of dealing with people in business.
Business books, and you know, this is probably the section where I had the longest list, because as TLC has grown, I've definitely relied on the learnings of others, and I do that a lot through reading. So there's a great book that's specific to our industry, not presentation design, but design. It's called The Business of Design by Keith, I think it's Granite, G-R-A-N-E-T. I don't know how to pronounce that, but it is a great book. It's a hardcover. I'm pretty sure by the look of it, it's probably used as a textbook in design school, like in the business course, but a lot of really great business-oriented information about a design firm.
What do you got, Sandy?
Well, you know, I used to absorb these books. I had hundreds of them, I swear, and I don't have them anymore. The ones that I have on my shelf now are...
It was a tragic fire, Nolan. She lost them all.
I just, I went through this phase of...
deacquisition?
Oh, that's a great term.
Deacquisition. I just needed to clean my shelves, exactly. Probably in a move. I still have a few on my shelf.
You know where the term deacquisition is used?
No.
Museums.
Sounds like a government. Oh, okay.
Well, museum. Because museums are not supposed to sell artwork, and sometimes they have to for various reasons or choose to, but they don't. They say, no, we're not selling the artwork. We're just deacquisitioning it.
Oh, how do you know that?
I know stuff. My bookshelves are categorized. I have lots and lots of books in different categories, some things that are hard to explain. For example, I have a whole stack of books on art forgery. And I'm just gonna leave it there.
Nolan, you never cease to amaze me.
and then I have my bookshelves on my magic books and my circus books. And you guys know about my sordid history, right?
Yes.
Magician. Yeah. So this was not a book, but a cassette tape. So this is going to go way back. The first thing, book or cassette or lessons in business I got was from this cassette tape by a guy named Michael Amar. He's a magician. He's still out there. It was called Negotiating Higher Performance Fees. And, you know, I probably paid like $10, you know, which was a lot at the time back there for me. But it was like a 60-minute cassette where he just talks through his techniques as a magician for getting higher rates. And to this day, I still use some of those techniques. Things like, it was like an eye-opener, and I would use it all the time. Like, for example—
By a magician, is it like you slide a different contract in there at the last moment of the song?
No, it's things like, you know, you know, somebody asks you how much you charge, and you say $100, and you wait to listen or pick up on what they say. And if immediately they start saying, oh, you know, you jump right in, and then he calls this the salami technique, and you go one of either ways. Because if you want the job, you say, oh, yeah, but that 100 includes X and Y and Z and the preparation. Or if they say, oh, 100, that's it? You say, yeah, well, of course, that's just for the base, you know, performance. If you want, you know, the bunny rabbit with the kid and the balloon animals and this or that, like, that's this and that's this. And
awesome.
Yeah, and that's only the 30-minute show. The 45-minute show is – so, yeah. A lot of techniques like that. But that's general negotiating techniques.
That's pretty awesome to get. That's a whole different track for getting that information.
Yep.
That's awesome. I got a couple more. Sandy, you got one?
The Promise of Potential by a colleague, Jody Davis, is a short, sweet, yet professional read on developing yourself personally so that you can become a great business person. So, you know, you start with at the core, how can you strengthen your personal skills, yourself in order to run your business well? So I think that's a great read. You know, it's Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, right?
Oh,
all
yeah.
the Malcolm Gladwell books. And that's just, it's inspirational and affirmational.
So I've got one. Have you heard of Mule Design? It's just a really cool design
company. Oh, I love those books.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So, it's a Mike Monteiro.
Montero.
I read one of his. I had to pull it off my shelf. It's Design is a Job. And again, this is very business. And I'm just going to read the back cover little paragraph here because it pretty much says it. Mike wants to help you do your job better, from contracts to selling design, from working with clients to working with each other, as in a design agency. This brief book is packed with knowledge you can't afford not to know. And it really is. It had a lot of great information. I think it'd be good for somebody doing, you know, a solo studio where it's just one designer, to a design studio with multiple layers of talent and personnel. It was a really, really good read. Got good notes in there.
Yeah, I love that book. Have you read You're My Favorite Client by him?
No, I haven't.
So that's he wrote that a year or two ago, and it's in a similar vein, but it's written not for the designer. It's written for clients who work with designers. So it's advice to them on how to deal with a designer and things like that. So, I mean, he suggests that people buy it and give it out to all their clients. And it's written in the same sort of, he's a very irreverent writer, very foul-mouthed. He's got some good YouTube speeches up.
Oh, really?
Which the titles of some we can't say on this to keep our PG rating on iTunes, but just go Google it. He's got a really good one.
I must add that the Design is a Job, it looks like readers either love it or hate it. And
it's a personality thing.
Yeah.
It really is. Haven't read it.
He's very abrasive. You
know, abrasive, there's a good word.
Awesome.
Yeah, Lori wouldn't read it, but I loved it. So I've got one more in this category, and I'm sure Nolan and Sandy have colors, but I actually recommended this one to you, Nolan, a while ago. This is by a guy named William Beachy. If you're starting a...
You didn't mention the title. It's called Drawn to Business.
To Business, yes. Drawn to Business by William Beachy of Go Media. And I'm a little bitter about this one for one aspect, in that they lowered the price on this. It was a full package. I mean, it was the book. It was Photoshop templates. It was a lot of the behind-the-scenes contract type of paperwork. I'm trying to remember everything that was in it. And I bought this thing at full price, and it was a lot of money, not thousands. It was that, and I think they just decided they weren't selling enough of it to get rid of it. They just dropped the price. So I think everybody should go buy this, because it's like under $100 for the whole kit, I'm sure now.
Wow.
But I would say the value was there when I bought it, because it was a true, let's talk about how we run our business. Everything from how do we hire people to how do we set up our file structure, which I'm really big on. And that'll be a future topic for us, to how do we deal with clients. It's a really true, open, behind-the-scenes talk about how to run a company. And I really, really do think it's a powerful book that should be widely, widely known and used. So it's a good one.
Yeah, no, I've read it, and I like it. My last one is Tribes by Seth Godin.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about easy-to-read short books. I think he writes like one a week or something. I mean, he's written so many, but this is one I like just about tribe. It's basically, he recommends building your tribe and not trying to convince everybody that what you're doing is correct, but just gather the people that have like-minded thinking. And that's the way to success in business.
I just finished, within the past few weeks, we just finished a project where the creative director anchored a large national sales meeting theme that it's a pitch deck. You know, we put the whole pitch out there, but that was the anchor of it, is Tribes was the book they're going to give out.
Oh, nice.
And it was a spin on it. It was really, really cool.
Have you guys read Made to Stick?
Oh yeah. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I didn't know where to put that in our categories.
I stuck it here, but I think it's just it's a great guide on, you know, our jobs are all about helping our clients transform their communications, and this gives you basically steps as to help us as presentation designers and business people to create ideas that stick.
Yeah, that, in other words, that are memorable. I mean,
yes,
I always tell
yes.
people that there are only two things that a presentation has to do. So every decision you make, like what color should I use, it all has to answer one or two things. It has to make your presentation more clear and more sticky.
Yes.
So they have to understand what you're saying, and they have to remember what you're saying. And, you know, the made to stick. That all comes from that idea of memorability is what the book's all about.
It's a great book. It has the world's ugliest color for its cover, but it's a
great
book.
Orange?
I kind of like it.
I don't like it.
I'm very into orange.
It's a mustardy. I'm holding it right now. I don't like it.
Maybe
I
you've
like
left it in the sun. For
it's gotten worse. Yeah. It's a great one.
If you touch the tape on it, it's textured. I think that's ingenious. Right?
It is. It totally is. Yeah. It's duct tape, not duct tape, and it is not gaff tape.
All right. Let's talk about data visualization. There's a ton out there. So I think we're going to sort of breeze through this maybe a little more quickly.
You might be surprised in my first two books.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. Cognitive Style, a PowerPoint by Edward Tufte.
Who's that?
I might not agree with everything he has to say about PowerPoint specifically. But his point is well made, and I think the cognitive style of PowerPoint is what made him famous. That book, I know his envisioning information is very successful as well. But his whole story about how the space shuttle came down because of PowerPoint, I think, is what made his claim to fame.
Yeah, so I mean, Tufte has that was I believe the first thing he wrote, but then he's got a set of four books after that. That are really, the first one was the visual display of quantitative information. It's got three
That's
others.
Right. These well, are see, all. I didn't in, know the order. So
yeah,
very
so
good.
These are all in the show notes. Yep. We won't go over everything, but those are really seminal, books on information and data design. He was really the first, and still sort of like the godfather of information design. So the books are from a pure just publishing point of view, they are beautifully designed, beautifully produced, and they're all self-produced. So they really should be on everyone's shelf. And because he forces you to buy them whenever you go see him speak, they are on the shelves of many, many people. I just see them all over the place.
Let me do my part over again. Let me tell you that the cognitive style of PowerPoint is the book that launched his career. It may be relevant today, but many of the – what he did was he addressed the default – problems of PowerPoint, which aren't necessarily a problem anymore. You know, for example, the default chart that we get. Remember in the days where it used to be the 3D ugly chart with all the junk on it?
Oh, yeah, where you couldn't tell what was actually the greater value.
Exactly. Well, that's not an issue anymore. I mean, there's still room for improvement in PowerPoint charts, but that's been overcome.
What else? Do you have anything, Troy?
You know, this is probably my area where I have the fewest elements that I kind of threw in there. Like some of Dave Peretti's books would fall into this. I'm just going to kind of listen along. I agree. Tufte books are great. They're great eye candy. I like thumbing through them. I can't say I've actually read one from cover to back.
They can be a little academic.
Academic. There's the word I was looking for earlier. They're very academic, and I'm looking for more practical. But I think that when I still pull some out when we kind of like, hey, we need a different way of visualizing something along, this type of data,
If you want
through and find ideas,
the books are great, but there are a few other sort of big writers and thinkers on data viz, and Stephen Few is one that he has three or four books, Show Me the Numbers, Now You See It, Information Dashboard Design. I just call Stephen Few the more practical version of Tufte because his books also are well designed. But those are the ones where you really can crack them open and see, oh, this is how I should design my bar chart. This is how, a scatter plot should look. I just find him a little more approachable, practical, and he's got a great blog too. Albert Cairo is another huge writer. He's the functional art, the truthful art. And also in terms of just getting examples and inspiration, David McCandless has a number of books, including Information is Beautiful. And he was one of the first people to really, really do graphical visual design, like really interesting things with, proportional shapes and just really unique things that have sort of like, people have learned from it. You can see his influence in infographics online.
Nolan, speaking of proportional shapes, I have to, kudos on the podcast or the video that you and Glenna Shaw put together on
charts.
Yeah, for Microsoft's Channel 9.
Yes, very well done. And
thank you.
Your feature of how to create proportional shapes using a default PowerPoint chart is very, very effective.
Cool. Yeah, we recorded that about a year ago, and it
suddenly
it was the last summit, and now it just got published. So yeah, that's out. We'll put a link into that. It's also on my blog. You can get it.
Good.
Get a link to that there. Good chart. Nathan Yao is a newer writer. He gets into his programming and some web stuff and big data design as well. So he's really good. And then there are, you know, a couple more maybe accessible recent books, Storytelling with Data by Cole Nussbaumer. She's wonderful. Good Charts just came out Scott Baronato. Yep.
I like that one.
Effective Data Visualization by Stephanie Evergreen. She's a friend. She's good. Naomi Robbins, Creating More Effective Graphs is really good. So again, these are all in the show notes. There's a lot out there. So if you type data visualization into Amazon, you're going to get tons and tons of hits.
Well, let's go into, we already kind of dived over or went overboard on this one, but how about some fun, inspirational, irrational books on your shelf? Just, hey, what else is there?
There's a cool little deck of cards called the Creative Whack Pack. Do you know about this?
I have heard about it. I don't have it, but I actually know what
I'll buy
it
you a copy.
Is.
It's fun. It's been like, I think my brother gave me a copy when he found it in design school when he came home and gave me a copy. It's like 52 cards that all, you know, are well-designed solutions for overcoming design challenges or just getting your head thinking around like, you know, something's not working. So, you know, come up with the worst possible idea you could, and that's a potential path to the right idea, to the problem solving. And it's, you know, the point is when you're stuck, you just sort of pick out a card, look at it, and it'll give you an example of that in action. So I really like that.
What else?
I think we should probably include magazines in this section because I read a lot of magazines. So before I list anyone else, magazines.
My magazine reading tends to be non-work related.
No, I read magazines online. I don't subscribe to anything anymore.
We have magazines showing up at the office. Lori made me finally say, change all business related ones to the office mailbox so our mailbox has room. But like How Magazine, still a great magazine, very design centric. Maximum PC is my favorite for computer related stuff. When I'm ever on an airplane, I've actually kind of moved away from books just because airplanes are so much more crowded and interruption filled now with all the announcement stuff. So I read magazines more, but Entrepreneur, Inc. magazine, those are like my staples. I always have one of those with me when I'm traveling. I usually bring two or three because they kind of pile up. Well, online, who goes? I do a lot of online, obviously. What do you look at online?
Well, and this tends to be more business, the list I have at hand, but Inc. magazine, Fortune magazine, Wired. I go to InDesign. I mean, that's not really a magazine, but
It's a newsletter.
It's a newsletter. It has a lot of information, of course, and Fast Company.
Oh, I didn't list Fast Company. One I get all the time. Yeah, that's I actually get the print version. Mm-hmm. Fast Company and Wired has been around forever. I think it's great. I think it was really cool when they went to Wired 2.0. That was a good marketing phase for their redesign.
Yeah.
Nolan, online stuff?
Not too much. I read the AIGA newsletter, Design Taxi.
Ooh, what's that one?
It's just a design website, you know, a aggregator of various design stories.
Cool.
Logo Design Love I like a lot when I'm in a logo branding mood. All about logos. So not too much.
I do Adobe Create Magazine has some good articles. I guess I'd put lynda.com. Even though it's not really reading, it's more listening and watching, but that's online. I have this really fun one, and I have no idea how to pronounce it. It's ABDUZEEDO, Abduzito. It's a fun design one. It's just, I will put the link there because I can't pronounce it. It's a URL that somebody said, look, it's available. Well, let's wrap up. Any final thoughts?
Final thoughts? None.
No, you're done. You're out of here.
Done.
Okay. My final thought is, you know, I mentioned beyond bullet points. I suggest that folks read the appendix for a summary of why slides should be designed the way we design them. It's the science behind it. And over again, using the information found in that appendix, I've been able to help my clients understand why my slides look good. It's not because of just for design's sake, but it's because it's how humans learn.
Well, thank you for being a part of the Presentation Podcast Book Club, our first and only meeting that we know of in existence or on the schedule. But there's a ton of reading out there. There's a lot of great information. We're just going to put everything in the show notes. It's definitely just the perspective of three studio owners, and hopefully it provides a good starting point for a lot of people, or reference and resource. And it's been fun. I have a few new things to add to my list. So thank you, Sandy and Nolan. Let's our wrap-ups and pro tips and tech tips, and we'll get this thing ready to go live. Okay, let's talk about presentation pro tips, everything to do with presentation design and just those, some of those tips and tricks. So, and I got this one because it just bit me within the past few days. You know, spell check and all cap words. Have you guys ever had problems with this? In other words, spell check.
Not that I'm aware, but thank you for making us aware.
Well, here's the reason why. And we just did one of the presentations that went out, and it went out before we caught this. The slide titles were set in all caps. The default for PowerPoint is to ignore all cap words. And that's mainly for like acronyms and stuff. So, you know, because you don't want the little squiggly underline under every single acronym. But in this case, we misspelled a very common word, and PowerPoint didn't tell us about it because on that designer's computer, the default was still to, well, what you do is you go to File, Options, Proofing, and then you'll look in the list there, and there's a little checkbox for ignore words in uppercase. And that's on by default. So if you misspell school with, and that was not the word, by the way. But if you misspell school without the C or without the H, so S-C-O-O-L or something, it's not going to tell you it's spelled wrong if it's in all caps. You have to,
Troy,
unless you know that. Yes.
That's huge. I mean, because the trend is what? We have all caps in our headlines, or we're using all caps.
It's a very on-trend thing. Yep. It just caught us. We had a typo go out. It was kind of like a rookie move. And what's funny is when I looked at the presentation, it showed up as a misspelled word because I don't have that little default. And one of the designers did. We've now corrected it. And it was just kind of like a, oops, we're sorry. And so Microsoft was not being as helpful as it should be, or maybe it was trying to be too helpful. And, you know, anyways, so there it is. Spell check with all cap words. There are some options there that can
hurt I'll change that. My tip, my presentation tip is an announcement. Jamie Garosh's text to outline tool that I've mentioned, I don't know, 16 times in our 14 podcasts. His online text to online outline tool now works with placeholders.
Oh, so, that's huge.
Yes, that's huge. So update that. Basically what that means is we can use non-standard fonts in our templates, in our masters, and change them all at one time. I mean, which means they're going to be a shape again. They're not editable anymore, but if you know it's a one-off presentation, you build a template to build that, to support that presentation. Now we can do it with placeholders.
Nice. Mine's something that popped up in the last version of PowerPoint, I think. It's only on the PC. There's a box at the top right called Tell Me, and this is different from Help. Which can sometimes be frustrating. Tell Me is if you're looking for a feature or a function or a tool or something, you just don't know where it is, you can just type in, for example, you know, show master, you know, show slide master, if you don't really know how to get to it. And it will give you a little drop down, usually of options, where you can immediately click. It'll pop down, you know, view slide master or whatever, and you can click it right from there. So I use it every once in a while when I just like, where's that thing? It's just go right there and it'll pop right down and you click and it takes you right to it. So it doesn't necessarily teach you where to find it in the future, but it will take you right there to it. So we hope it'll come to the Mac, but it's a nice little shortcut.
That I've seen that in use quite a bit over the past I don't know, 3-4 weeks, a month. And it's pretty cool because it's very plain. It's very much more plain language than I would have expected.
From Microsoft.
Yes. Okay, there is presentation tips. Let's get some tech tips going here.
Well, I'll start. I have, you know, I use an Android phone and I use GoToMeeting a lot. For some reason, Outlook has quit working where if you want to dial in, you can click in the meeting notice and GoToMeeting. You can click on the telephone number and it will connect you to the GoToMeeting telephone number, but it will not automatically type in the user code. So what I found myself doing, and this is just advice if people are running into the same thing, is when it comes to using GoToMeeting on an Android, you need to use the default Samsung email client to easily access GoToMeeting. And by easily, I mean, if I'm in a car and I'm taking a GoToMeeting, I can't sit there and type in the user code. So all it is it's a click of a button, and GoToMeeting then, and with the help of Samsung mail client, brings you automatically and to the telephone, or it automatically brings you to the GoToMeeting and enters the user code for you.
Oh, nice.
That is really cool. I use WebEx more than GoToMeeting, I guess.
Okay.
And I don't think any of that is ever populated, or I've never been smart enough to figure out how that it could do it. So I'm always like trying to figure out how to type that stuff in, or having somebody in the passenger seat, here, enter this. That is really, okay. So good tip, but I've also learned that I should probably go figure out what my phone is capable of. I'm on the iPhone platform, but still, I didn't know it would do that automatically. Very awesome. So speaking of phones, for an office phone system, we, a little while ago now, but we did move to a voice over IP business phone service, a VoIP service, and we're using 8x8.com. I think they're great. It's probably not going to be, if you have a very large company-wide thing, because it's a cost per phone, and maybe it is. I don't know what companies, big companies pay, but it's a big company service. I mean, we got the cool Cisco phones, with all the little forwarding features. And, you know, I'm recording this at my home office today, but I have a business phone right here. We moved one over to the home office. I've got one at my, a second extension over in the studio, and, you know, they're separate locations, and, it's really cool. So the voicemail, the built-in faxing, the transferring calls, the all that good stuff is in there. And it's really good if you're just doing a couple of phone lines, because it gives you all the features of a big company. So that is a really cool tech tip from my world of how do you like deal with this and not have one phone line or two phone lines and juggle it around and get all those other big company features.
So, I'm going to talk to you later about that.
Oh, okay.
Too small for that. But phone quality is always an
issue. And the other thing? Well, the phone quality has been really good. That was actually one of the selling features, but you can forward your business line to your cell phone, so it's seamless to anybody around. So when I'm traveling around, I forward it over to my cell phone, and I can tell when it's an incoming office call or, you know, cell number call, and it's got some really, really cool features. So very, very happy with them. But again, if you had like 20, 50, 100 phone lines, I'm not so sure the cost would be good, because it's a flat fee per phone line. So, you know, we have under 15. It's manageable.
Mm-hmm. Well, my tech tip is when you're setting up your laptop and you're trying to use the cable in the room, it's never long enough for where you want your laptop to be. So, you know, I travel with my own cables and adapters, but the adapter that I use most often is a female to female HDMI connector, because I prefer to use HDMI, but it seems like the only HDMI cables in corporate America are like 3 feet long or like 5 feet, and it's never quite long enough. So I travel with my own HDMI cable and this connector. So all I have to do is plug it into that hardwired connector, which is usually goes under the floor or someplace where you can't get to. So I just female to female, and you know, it's not really a degradation issue. But that's much easier than carrying a like 15-foot long HDMI and then trying to swap out yours for theirs. So
good idea.
That's
great,
my
tip.
Great tip. Adapter.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging and design or show site graphics ops, let us know. We're at www.tlccreative.com, and my blog is www.thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, and subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. If you're interested in on-site presentation or data viz training, drop me a line.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. Visit my website at presentationwiz.biz and my blog at pptwizblog, or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.